good. Good evening, everyone. Good to see everybody out tonight. For those of you who are visiting, we're especially glad to have you. As you can see from the slide, we're in the book of Genesis, and in particular, we'll be studying chapters 6 through 9 tonight, which is the story of Noah and the flood. Again, we're glad to have each of you here. Lord willing, Sunday, Brent will be teaching chapters 10 and 11 of Genesis. And also, there were some of you who asked for the book from the Waldrons that cover this quarter. There are a few that are left on the back, in the very back, in a paper bag. So if you asked for one earlier, please get one per family. Okay, we'll do a short review before we get started into tonight's lesson. Of course, we're studying the flood. The first four parts are covered of the seven-day period Waldron outline in the book of Genesis. We've talked about the creation and how that the creation shows God's power and his wisdom, how he spoke everything into existence. And that ought to mean a lot to us, to know who we serve, that he's our God. He's the one who created everything, including us. We're part of his creation. We're a special part of his creation, but we're part of that. He told man and the animals after creation to be fruitful and to multiply and to fill up the earth. And tonight we'll see the same thing that's said to Noah and his sons and to the animals after the flood. God created a perfect place in Eden for Adam and Eve to live in. It had everything that they needed, food, place to stay, water to drink, everything that they needed to worship God and to live and to have work to do. But of course, we know that Adam and Eve messed that situation up and had to move out. Where was Eden? We're not told exactly. We're told some characteristics of the area. We're told about four different rivers that were in the close area there. If you take a look down toward the right bottom part of the screen, toward the Persian Gulf, that's one area where sometimes people think that Eden may have been. If you look toward the top center of the screen, that would be where the headwaters of the Tigris and the Euphrates are, and some people think that maybe it was there. One thing to pay attention to on this particular map, if you can see it, is above that top Eden one is Mount Ararat, and we'll be talking about that a little bit tonight. Man was created in the image of God, and we've made a point of saying that should be our purpose every day, is to remain in his likeness, to be in his likeness, in true righteousness and holiness. Of course, we've seen several examples already where man has fallen off of that, but that should be our example. That should be what we're shooting for every day, to be righteous and holy like God. Brent taught us Sunday about Cain and Abel, and how they both offered sacrifices to God, and how Abel's was accepted. He offered it according to faith. Cain's was not accepted. And whether it was because of jealousy or what, he winds up killing his brother, Abel. And we can see, I believe that is the first murder that we hear about or read about. And as Brent brought up the point, you don't want to compound sin with sin, as Cain did. Then we see Seth's lineage. And he was called Seth by his parents because they said he was given to them to take the place of Abel. And the thing that Brent brought out that is, I think, most important for our lesson tonight is men began to call upon the name of the Lord, the very thing that God made them to do. Okay, so men began to call on the name of the Lord. All right. Today's lesson. Anything, any comments or questions anybody wants to make before we get into today's lesson? Okay, we've got quite a bit to cover. So, context of tonight's lesson. I'm sure most of us are familiar with the story of the flood. But in the context of the flood, who are the main characters? Well, of course, we have God, we have Noah and his wife, we have Shem, Ham, and Japheth and their wives. eight people and God. And of course, mainly we'll be talking about Noah and God. When was this? This was obviously after the creation, after Adam and Eve, as during the flood period. At the end of chapter 5 that Brent covered on Sunday, Noah was 500 years old. So somewhere thereabouts after 500 years old, Noah is at the beginning of chapter 6. And from the beginning, we're at approximately year 1556. And I'll tell you in a little bit how I come up with that number. And then where? I don't know where the ark was built at, but I do know that the flood was over the whole earth. Okay. So how do we come up with this 1,556 years? Well, if you take a look at this chart and you start taking a look on the right-hand side, you see the parent and how old they were whenever a child was born. So Adam was 130 years old when Shem was born. Shem was 105 when Enosh was born. And then you add up all those numbers and you add 500 for Noah and you come up with 1,556 years. The Waldrons make mention in their book that, you know, we may not have everybody in the lineage. And in, of course, in that case, if that is the case, then some other number would be right. But just going by the numbers that we have in the Bible, roughly 1,500 years. And if that number is roughly, approximately right, and another approximation of the earth being approximately 6,000 years old, you see that the Bible in 5 chapters covers roughly a quarter of the earth's existence. Just 5 chapters in Genesis covering roughly a quarter of the existence of the earth. 66 books in the Bible and only 5 chapters to cover those 1,500 years. So we know that there's a whole lot that's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about in those years. Okay, questions or comments about that? Again, the exact numbers, they're not really that relevant, just what we can see. In the context of the flood, man was awful. He was very wicked. We see wickedness around us today, and it was very bad then. The wickedness of man was great in the earth. These first 4 straight comments from the Bible. Every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Everything they thought about was evil. Everything they planned for was evil. All flesh had corrupted their way on the earth, and the earth was filled with violence. This part about the earth being filled with violence stood out to me this time as I was studying. And we'll talk about it in a little bit. When God told Noah that he was going to destroy the earth, at least one of the reasons was, he said, was because of the violence. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But you see the state of man, how evil he was in this situation. And it says that the sons of God took wives of the daughters of men. Used to be you would hear people talking about how that was angels came and married humans. But the Waldrons bring out the fact that in Matthew 22 and verse 30, Jesus said that angels are neither married nor are given in marriage. So kind of rules that out. The Waldrons bring up a point that we talked about a little while ago. During Seth's descendants, then became men to call on the name of the Lord. They were trying to follow after God. And the Waldrons say, maybe this is what he's talking about as far as the sons of God are concerned. And we also saw how Cain killed his brother and how some of his descendants weren't following after God. And maybe these were the sons of men. Was that it? I can't say that for certain, but that is the best explanation that I've heard of that. In Matthew 24 and verse 38, Jesus believed in the account of Noah. He said, therefore, as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. So Jesus believed in the story of Noah. People may say that it is a made-up fairy tale, but Jesus didn't think so. And these people were living lives just like you and me. They were going about their daily business. They were getting married. They were having parties. But they were very evil. So you wonder how we see all the evil around us. How is it that they were different than we are today, if any? One thought that comes to mind. Apparently there were only 8 righteous people on the earth. Noah, his wife, their 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. Made me think about, you remember the conversation that God had, or the Lord had with Abraham when he was going to Sodom. And Abraham, the Lord said, I won't destroy Sodom if there are 10 righteous people there. Apparently there weren't 10 righteous people there because the Lord destroyed Sodom. And it makes you think about the how Elijah was when he was running from Ahab and Jezebel. And he thought he was the only righteous person around. But the Lord told him, I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. A couple of points about that is that narrow is the way, right? It's always been a few that are going to be able to find, or that find it, not able to find it, but find it. That was the way back then in Noah's time. It was the way that it was in Elijah's time. And it's the way that it is now. But maybe, like in Elijah's time, maybe there's more than we think there are. I would certainly hope, I would certainly expect that God would find more than 10 people, hopefully here at Eastside, that he would consider righteous. Okay, questions or comments up to this point? Okay. God decides to destroy the earth. These first couple of comments here are so sad. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth. He was grieved in his heart. We've all had people who were close to us who would not follow after God, who turned away from him, and it grieves us. We're so sorry. We want them to turn around. We want to do it for them, but they won't do it. And maybe that is something that we ought to think about ourselves whenever we sin, that we're causing grief to God. But there was this one man called Noah who found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And the Lord said to him, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. What was it about Noah that caused him to find grace in the sight of the Lord? I think we can see from the Bible that he was a righteous man. In Hebrews 11 and verse 7, it says, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. God told Noah about some things that he had not seen before. He had not seen a worldwide flood before, obviously. Maybe he hadn't seen rain. Mr. Waldron in the book says that in chapter 2, where it talks about the mist going up from the earth, that maybe that is the way that, you know, it's talking about the cycle that rain comes through today. And maybe he's right. Maybe that was rain. But either way, Noah had not seen a worldwide flood. And as far as I'm concerned, I doubt that he had ever seen an ark the size of one that he had built. But the thing about it is, Noah believed God. And it wasn't just a mental, yeah, what God said is true. It caused him to act. And he went and he did a lot of work. A ton of work, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute, because he believed what God told him about this flood that was going to come. And so he believed God. He acted on that. He showed his righteousness in believing and acting on God's word. And I think that's a lesson for us too. In 2 Peter 2 and in verse 5, it says, God did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. So, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Did he go around in a circuit like Samuel or somebody to all these different places and preaching the flood is coming, the flood is coming? Well, the Bible doesn't tell us that. Whether he I believe he probably told people, whether he went out and actively did that, or whether it was just by what he talks about in Hebrews 11 and verse 7, by building the ark, he condemned the world. Either way, he was a preacher of righteousness. Questions or comments about that? Brent mentions that there was some long suffering on the part of God for all the time that it took for Noah to build the ark and get things ready. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. Okay. What kind of man was Noah? He was a righteous man. In Ezekiel chapter 14, there's some verses that really stand out to me. In verses 13 and 14 of Ezekiel 14, it says, Son of man, when the land sins against me by persistent unfaithfulness, I will stretch out my hand against it. I will cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off man and beast from it. Even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they would deliver only themselves by their righteousness, says the Lord. And basically, he says the same kind of idea in verses 19 and 20. Wouldn't you like to have your name attached to the end of that? Noah, Daniel, Job, me. Boy, to think that God thought enough of me, or you know, to think enough of any of us to put us in that list of righteousness. That's what God thought of them, Noah, Daniel, and Job. So Noah was a righteous man. And we see several times in our passages tonight, chapter 6 through 9, where he did all that God commanded him. He was a man, though, and he had his faults. And we'll talk a little bit about that. The building of the ark. God gave Noah some specific commands, and he gave some commands to Noah that seemed to be pretty open-ended. He said specifically, use gopher wood. Did he tell him how thick a wood to use on the ark? Did he tell him how to cut it, how to nail it together, how to do? There's a lot that we're not given that God may or may not gave to Noah, but he gave Noah enough for him to put it together. He gave him the dimensions of the ark. And if a cubit is a foot and a half, as we think it was 450 feet by 75 feet by 45 feet. Only had one window and one door. It had three levels to it. So if you add those up, if you multiply the 450 feet by the 75 feet, and then you multiply that by three stories, you get over 100,000 square feet of floorage that he had to put himself, to put the animals, and to put the food in. It was a major undertaking. As Brent mentioned, it took a long time. At the end of chapter 5, Noah is 500 years old. When the flood begins, he's 600 years old. So maybe approximately 100 years there that he was in the process of building the ark. What a big endeavor. And Noah did according to all that God gave him. If you ever get the chance, I would encourage you to go to Kentucky and see the ark exhibit. Is it exactly what Noah built? I don't know. I imagine that they took a lot of liberties in building what they have up in Kentucky. But to me, it made me at least think about how big a structure that Noah built. And they have all these little rooms in there, like God said, let you know, for there to be rooms in there where they'll put the animals and they put the food and the places for their quarters and all. Again, is it exactly like God told him to build it? I can't say that it is. But it gives you an idea of the amount of work that Noah went to do what God told him to do. And we don't see Noah pushing back, at least from the scriptures. We don't see any pushback at all about that. God told Noah to do this. One man builds this thing. Maybe his sons and his sons' wives and his wife help him with it. Maybe he got other people to do it, help him with it too. But we know God told him to build it, and he made sure it happened. What an undertaking. And just a couple of more pictures just to kind of get an idea about how huge of an undertaking that Noah went through. Okay, questions about that? Running out of time. The Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous for me in this generation. All right, and he told him how many of the clean animals to bring into the ark. He told him how many of the unclean animals to bring into the ark. And this story in chapters 6 through 9 is the first time that we see the idea of clean and unclean animals. Of course, we read about that a lot under the law of Moses, but this is the first time that we see that idea. And he tells them that in 7 days the flood's going to start. And here you are, you're Noah, and you've been working for so long to get this work together. I'm sure there's a lot of emotions going through Noah's mind as he knows that there's only a week ahead. And he knows he's probably got family out there that aren't listening to him. You know, when he's building all this big structure, and there's never been a flood or anything of that nature before, people are coming up to Noah all the time and asking, what's you doing? Just out of, are you crazy? And he probably had a lot of people thinking he was crazy. And probably a lot of them were relatives. And that probably went through his mind too. We know how Methuselah lived to be 969 years old. Did he die in the flood? I don't know, but it was within a year of it. Noah did what all God told him to do. And so Noah and his family and animals enter the ark. God makes sure the animals enter the ark. And God closes the door, the one door that's on the ark. And the Bible is explicit about when the flood starts. It's in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month of his life, the 17th day of that month. And the Bible's also explicit about when they come out of the ark. It'll be a year and 10 days later. And so we're all familiar with the numbers there in that last line with the rain was on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. But we also read about how the fountains of the deep were broken up. You remember how in the first few verses there of Genesis chapter 1, it talks about how that the Spirit of God went over the surface of the deep. Well, now the fountains of that deep are opening up. And the windows of heaven are open and it's raining and the water is coming up. Did the people outside the ark have any time to think about it? Or were they just deluged all of a sudden and died in minutes? I don't know. Did they have time to think, oh, I want to try to get over while this water is going up? I don't know. You reckon did any of them think, you know, Noah wasn't so stupid after all? I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward and the mountains were covered. So to me, what that says is that the mountains were covered by 22 and a half feet of water. You could not see land anywhere. And so today, Mount Everest is the highest peak on earth. And if it was the highest peak then, it would have been covered by 22 and a half feet of water. Amazing. It kind of goes back to the way the earth was before day three. Remember, before day three, there was no land that you could see. It was on day three that land appeared. Well, at the peak of the flood, there was no land appearing. Did you have a comment, Josh?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it doesn't say specifically if people might have tried or not to get him to let them apart, but it does say that God shut up the thing so that Noah could not, you know, open the door.
Josh was making the point that God shut the door, and even if there were people who wanted to get in, God had shut the door. Yes, sir. Brent?
The words all and whole, verse 19, the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered.
Brent was saying the words all and whole are used in verse 19 to say that all the hills, all the whole was covered in water. There was nothing that was not covered. And as we see from the quotes here, everything that had breath died that was on land, except for Noah and his family and the animals that were in the ark. God remembered Noah and the people that were in the ark. He caused the waters to recede. He caused the rain to stop, and on the 17th day of the month, I take it this is from the beginning of the flood, almost a little over 7.5 months after the flood started, the ark rested on the mountains of Ararat, and on the 10th month, first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. This is a picture of Mount Ararat in Turkey, close to the Armenian border. If this is the same Ararat, to me, this is just a beautiful picture for one thing. But this is another view of Mount Ararat. And you can see that it has two peaks to it. One's about 17,000 feet. One's about 13,000 feet. Was this the mountains of Ararat that's referred to? Possibly. Okay. Y'all can see this very clearly, I'm pretty certain. Very small print on all of this. I won't say a lot about this, but maybe you can see the red dot in the middle. The red dot in the middle is where Mount Ararat in Turkey is. I'm sure most of us could show over there on the left-hand side, which would be the western part. That is where the Mediterranean Sea is. Down toward the bottom, a little bit toward the right, is where the Persian Gulf is. And I just wanted to bring this up to tie in some things that are going on right now in the world. So if you go to the northwest of that red dot, that is the Black Sea. And then at the top of that Black Sea is the Crimean Peninsula, and right above there is where all of the fighting between Russia and Ukraine is going on. So that kind of gives us an idea of, we can pick out probably because we know where the Mediterranean is, where Israel would be, where the Persian Gulf would be. That would have been where Babylon is, what we read about later. And then, of course, current events. Let's keep going. Okay, how did Noah know when to exit the ark? Well, one thing that he did was he sent out a raven. And the raven didn't come back to him. Kept flying until things were dried up. Then he sent out a dove out of the window, and the dove couldn't find a place to light, so it came back to Noah. Noah sends out the dove again later, and this time the dove brings back an olive leaf in its beak. And so Noah knows that things are drying up, things are beginning to bloom again. Finally, he sends out the dove a third time, and it doesn't come back. So, in Noah's 601st year, first month, first day of the month, the waters are dried up. And almost 2 months later, God tells Noah You get out of the ark with your family and get all the animals out of the ark. So they were on the ark for a year and 10 days. That's a long time to be in a boat. One window. Noah was a righteous man. And he did what God told him, even when I am sure it was not very convenient. Comments about that? Noah built an altar. This is the first time that I believe the word altar is used. And Noah took some of those clean animals that were there and he made an offering to God, and God accepted it. It was a soothing aroma to him. We know that Abel offered up of his flock. Did he build an altar to do that? I don't know. The Bible doesn't say so. This is the first time that we see the word altar used. So what have we got? We started off with a world that was so evil that it grieved God that he had created man. But he found one man who found grace in his eyes. And through that man, who was a preacher of righteousness, he saved his family through the ark by obeying what God told him to do. And he saved all those animals from destruction that God told him to save. One man saved his family to do that. Are there lessons there for us? Again, even when it may be that we think that we're just one person in the world doing everything different than what God wants, why am I even fighting? One man did, and his family. The Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake. I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. I won't destroy the earth again with the flood. And while earth remains, these will not cease. Among them, cold and hot, winter, summer, day and night. You know, with a lot of environmentalists today are thinking that we're going to burn up the earth and that a lot of these things are going to stop. All I can say is, God said things are not going to stop until the earth goes away. And so I can have confidence in that. Okay, God said he would never again curse the ground for man's sake. It hit me as I was studying this lesson how many times it talks about the earth being cursed in those first 9 chapters. You remember how after Adam had sinned, God told him, cursed is the ground for your sake. And then after Cain had killed Abel, he says, when you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. To me, that's cursing the ground, at least to Canaan. And then Noah's father said, he called Noah, this one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. So I just hadn't picked up before on the amount of times that is discussed there in those first early chapters of Genesis. Questions about that? Okay. Noah and his sons are told to replenish the earth, be fruitful and multiply. And the animals are too, just like Adam and Eve were. Okay. Meat is on the table now. You can't eat the blood, so no blood pudding. Wasn't tempted by that anyways. whoever sheds man blood, he's going to be shed also. He's going to be killed, so no murder. And God made a covenant to never destroy the earth again by flood, and he gave us the rainbow as a sign about that. And we all, at least everybody I know, every time I see a rainbow, it's a joy to see because it's so beautiful. But the important thing is that it's a sign to God and to us that he'll never destroy the earth with flood again. That's something that God set in place. Okay. Questions or comments about that? One other point. The whole earth was populated by Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Remember at the beginning, everything was populated by Adam and Eve. Now we're going back pretty much to square zero again, square one, and everybody descends from Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah. Noah became a farmer. He got drunk. Again, he was a man just like us. He was a righteous man, but he was a man just like us. He had his weaknesses. Ham goes and tells Shem and Japheth. Apparently, he did it in a way that wasn't very good because he makes Noah mad at that. Shem and Japheth go and cover Noah up and don't look at him while they do that. Noah curses Ham's son, Canaan, and says that he's going to be a servant of Shem's. And, of course, whenever Israel takes over the land of promise, that comes to pass. Okay. Sin makes God unhappy. We've talked about that. And we've been given every blessing through Christ. We can't afford to do that. Noah was obedient. We need to be obedient. Any other questions or comments? I've run out of time. Thank you for your participation tonight.